I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. A 2010 study released by the Alliance for Biking and Walking shows that lack of investment in biking and walking could be contributing to higher traffic fatalities and chronic disease rates in the U.S. The report reveals that in almost every state and major U.S. city, bicyclists and pedestrians are at a disproportionate risk of being killed and receive less than their fair share of transportation dollars. Today, we discuss efforts to integrate cycling into our region's transportation system and ways to educate drivers, riders, and walkers to make roadways safer for everyone. But first, we hear the story of how cyclists in Portland, Oregon have responded to bicycle automobile deaths on their city streets.
Walking down a street in the city of Portland, it's impossible to avoid seeing a bicycle. People will tell you that they bike
every day,
6 days a week,
and that they ride for all sorts of reasons.
The bike lanes around town are fantastic. I mean, I feel like I get a good workout.
It's like the coolest bike in Portland, I think. Anybody that drives a bicycle
roll around in the mud like a kid.
But urban bicycling is more than just a personal experience. It's one part of a system of interactions among different types of commuters. So what happens when the system fails? When something tragic happens?
You see this bike and you think, wow, that used to be somebody riding it, and now it's just empty.
Ghost bikes are bicycles painted white that act as monuments to fatal street collisions. They first appeared in 2003 and have since spread to over 46 cities worldwide. One stands at the corner of 14th and Burnside.
I was kind of teasing my sister, saying, you know, she's an adult now.
Susan Kubota is the aunt of Tracy Sparling, who was 19 years old.
And so I was just really looking forward to take her out for her first drink when she turned 21. She was killed by a cement truck.
Members of Portland biking forums and blogs organized a memorial ride for the following night.
Cyclists and people who commuted showing their outrage and grief at this senseless death.
At the end of the ride, at the site of the accident, a ghost bike had appeared.
While accidents on city streets are often imperceptible days or even hours afterwards, ghost bikes linger, continuing to disrupt the public space. We interviewed Diana, who's had a ghost bike in front of her house for the past 2 years. She recounts how her neighbors dealt with the disruption.
They thought it was morbid and that they were tired of looking at it and they were trying to rent the house. The woman sent her boyfriend over with the hacksaw and they cut the frames in half and took the bikes away.
She responded with a quick and angry phone call, and the bike was replaced. But the theft illustrates how ghost bikes provoke reactions that can be both difficult and unpredictable.
I wasn't quite sure how to take it.
What concerned Susan wasn't the ghost bike being morbid, but how it framed the life of her niece.
Tracy was just your average person just getting around on a bike. They don't even identify themselves as necessarily cyclists. I mean, we weren't irritated or anything like that, but we just thought this seemed kind of strange.
To Susan, the ghost bike was a symbol that belonged to the Portland biking community, and not her own. When we asked local blogger Wise Old Bike Guy to describe the community's reaction to ghost bikes, he gave us an unexpected answer. He wrote,
"May we all live to see the day where there is no longer any possible merit in drawing a distinction between the general public and the bike community."
Today, the media speaks of a war between cyclists and drivers, encouraging us to think of problems as ours or theirs. But ghost bikes point to shared tragedies and common challenges. We are left to figure out what these symbols mean, and in doing so, make them our own.
The ghost bike actually has turned out to be much more comforting than I would have ever imagined.
Susan gradually came to see the ghost bikes not as foreign, but intimate and expressive.
My sister and I routinely decorate it and keep it nice and clean with flowers.
She now shows up to as many bicycle safety events and meetings as possible.
Someone was saying, no, I've become a bike activist.
Tracy's ghost bike invites us to make that same leap between tragedy and agency. It asks us, how can we coexist most peacefully? One way the city has responded is by installing green bike boxes. These spaces give bikers more room and visibility in making dangerous right-hook turns.
They're scattered throughout the city on intersections that thankfully do not have ghost bikes.
The ghost bikes themselves are under constant threat of just disappearing. Portland law does not protect these makeshift monuments, but they continue to ask questions that need to be asked. how will we answer them?
Joining us in our Woods Hole studio to answer the question of how we can better incorporate cycling into our region's transportation system and make our roadways safer for all users is Scott Lindell, chairman of the Falmouth Bikeways Committee. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Ed Gross is vice chair of the Falmouth Bikeways Committee and the bicycling representative on the Cape Cod Joint Transportation Committee. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
And Lev Malikoff, who's the senior transportation engineer at the Cape Cod Commission. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mindy.
So the Portland, Oregon is a city that has embraced cycling. As we heard in that piece, there are bike lanes and other infrastructure in place, improving safety for cyclists on the streets, yet accidents do still happen. Cape Cod is an environment that gives us different opportunities and challenges as we look to enhance cycling opportunities and safety. So, Lev, let's start with you. What is the vision of the Cape Cod Commission when it comes to incorporating biking and walking into the region's long-term transportation plan?
Well, speaking for the Cape Cod Commission, I see my role as helping the communities of Cape Cod access federal and state transportation funding, and a necessary step in order to access that funding is the development of a regional transportation plan. We're serving as staff, but we work with groups such as the Cape Cod Joint Transportation Committee that Dr. Gross serves on and the Cape Cod Metropolitan Planning Organization. These are made up of representatives of all of our Cape Cod communities. And coming up with a regional transportation plan, we've identified bicycling as an important alternative to driving alone or some of the other alternatives of travel because of many benefits that you mentioned, reduced impact on air quality, the healthy option of bicycling. As you know, Cape Cod is made up of a lot of the the two-lane roads, and it's not a real opportunity to urbanize and expand with freeways. So for a lot of those shorter trips, the 5 to 10 mile range, bicycling is a really suitable alternative for many folks, especially in the time of year when we're having most of our transportation congestion from vehicles. Would be summertime, and that's when the weather's the best for being out there bicycling.
Yeah. Ed, I want to ask you, in that piece, he referred to the bike wars between bikes and drivers. What are your thoughts on that? I hope we've come a long way.
There has been a rather entrenched battle going on for a long time as the numbers of adult cyclists and commuter cyclists have risen slowly but surely. And as the number of motor vehicles on the road has gotten to huge numbers, so that people are battling for space. And, of course, that leads to collisions and death and injury. What's happened more recently is the changes in regulation and the demands placed on highway design have attempted to clarify the relationship between the different modes of transportation on the road and provide some sort of equity to those who are not in motorized boxes.
Mm. Scott, the Town of Falmouth Bikeways Committee decided to take an in-depth look at improving the town's transportation network specifically for cycling. So what are the goals of the committee?
Well, the goals were not just the committee's. This was a very widely participated public process, and it was facilitated by the Cape Cod Commission because they had done this helpful design of bicycling plans for other towns. But we took it and tailored it to our town in particular. If I could read our vision for Falmouth, our plan is prefaced with is Falmouth is a great place to live and to visit because its bike-friendly culture and infrastructure yield calm roads, clean air, and a healthy populace in a vibrant, sustainable economy. And all those pieces, I think, really come together when we think about the great treasure we have with the Shining Sea Bikeway that's been in existence, probably one of the oldest bikeways in the country, been around for 30 years. It creates this great north-south corridor. We'd like to create some east-west corridors, and we have one that's very simply and inexpensively can be employed in here in Falmouth. And we'd like to bring more of the energy of bicycling and the money that tourists bring to downtown, which is not that far from the bikeway. So we see trying to create all the roads in Falmouth as possibilities for bicyclists to travel safely and confidently, but certainly certain corridors that, that connect the villages of Falmouth instead of just this, not thinking about Falmouth as just being one shining sea bikeway, but we'd like to make the roads safer for her all.
There are bike routes, bike paths, and bikeways. So what are the differences in those terms? And are there certain criteria in terms of lane marking or lane size that must be met for bike routes or bikeways?
Well, maybe I can try to start off and others can chip in. Bike lanes, of course, are pretty self-explanatory. They're separated by a white fog line to the right of the vehicle travel lane. To be an official bike lane, they would be at least 5 feet wide, and they would be marked in the lane with a bicycle symbol. They are also something that's used that may be 4 feet wide that's considered a shoulder, but it can be suitable for bike accommodation. Mm-hmm. Bike ways is more of a route designation. In the case of the Shining Sea Bikeway, other facilities like the Cape Cod Rail Trail, it's really just a branding use of the word. But bike routes can be on either bike paths or along the lower volume streets. In some cases, they're actually to destinations. We have a regional route. People may have heard of the Clare Saltonstall Bikeway. It's a bike route that goes from Boston to Provincetown as well as down here to Woods Hole. You might have seen the little signs, small green bicycle symbol signs with an arrow. And there's usually the number one. It's State Bike Route 1, and mm-hmm. it passes through many of the Cape Cod communities.
So what are the factors then going into determining where the specific locations of bike routes or bikeways? How is that determined? Is it, you know, you a particular destination?
Well, for instance, in our bike planning process, we had a couple of public meetings and we had regular monthly meetings that anyone from the public could join. We had 100 people more in the Falmouth Library helping us as the bike committee figure out where were the destination points and what were the routes that were desirable but problematic, and how could we make engineering accommodations, for instance, to make those roads more suitable for bicycle transportation. And so we have a list of like 24 recommendations in our bicycle plan, which is posted on the town website, and anybody who's interested in viewing that can see that. So we had a meeting, public meeting, with the planning board and the board of selectmen a couple weekends ago, and there was not a member who didn't like what they saw. And I think they're expecting to vote to approve the bike plan at their next meeting. But to get to your point, the routes that we have chosen in our bicycle plan to improve went through this public process. And a lot of the engineering needs are simply paint, mm-hmm. Making the shoulder wider, as Lev alluded to. Sometimes that's making the travel lane that's painted a little narrower. That produces a calming effect so that drivers are more likely to travel at the speed limit that's set, and bicyclists will feel safer and more confident.
Yeah. Well, we're mentioning Falmouth, but Ed, maybe you can chime in on this. When we're looking at these bike routes Cape-wide, and I know there's been talk of connecting some of them as well.
The National Park Service jumped into this interesting question several years ago and ran a feasibility of connecting up all of the Cape's towns and little segments of bike route and bike way and trying to make something of a network. So their interest, their parochial interest, was, of course, getting people to ride out to the National Seashore and use it. But in the process, what they effectively developed is a master plan that shows how all of the Cape could be linked up into a system of bicycle preference routes that will get people from one town to the next. That was published and has served very well in the number of towns that are planning or improving bicycle access on their roads as well as bikeways.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity to plug a resource for folks. That study is available on the commission's website, capecodcommission.org/bikeped. Bicycle pedestrian, mm-hmm. So it's BIKEPED. And I believe you'll.
Yeah, we'll put some links.
Might have
yeah,
a link.
Yeah, yeah, we'll put some links up on our website.
So, they can, so there's a, links to a lot of our other studies, our planning efforts. There's a vision map there of connecting the what we're calling shared use paths, which includes Shining Sea Bikeway, Cape Cod Rail Trail, and the other more comfortable bicycling facilities. Just to chime in on the Falmouth plan. Because I want to echo a lot of what Scott said. One of the bike routes that I mentioned before, the Claire Salt install, we've actually prepared a recommendation for rerouting part of that route in Falmouth, that resources that we got from the town of Bourne and town of Falmouth is to direct folks who are riding their bicycles from the canal down to Woods Hole, for example. Through Bourne and North Falmouth, they have to go on local streets. But the original Salt install was using local streets when we now have a better facility starting at Route 151, which is the actual paved path. So the signage that's out there now and the route that's designated currently has people ignoring the Shining Sea Bikeway, which is an obvious feature that we want to encourage folks to use.
Too bad, because that extension, I was telling it before we went on the air, that as you ride through that Sipawisset Marsh, it's like you're riding through a postcard. It's so gorgeous. Beautiful. It really is. And the other thing you're mentioning, being able to ride, you know, all the way out to the National Seashore. And you might think, gosh, could I ride all the way back? You can bring your bike on the bus. So
that's
you
right.
You can take a trip like that and still, you know, do it in time that you can.
That's
you
quite
can
correct.
Make it
the RTA has taken great pride in making its buses bike accessible.
Multimodal, yeah.
I sit on a committee there, too, and they're always looking for ways to improve the connections. Right.
We are talking about linking bikes into our transportation system. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are discussing efforts to integrate cycling into our region's transportation system and ways to educate drivers, riders, and walkers to make roadways safer for everyone. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you would like to chime in. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. In studio with us, Scott Lindell, Chairman of the Falmouth Bikeways Committee, Ed Gross, Vice Chair of the Falmouth Bikeways Committee, and Bicycling Representative to the Cape Cod Joint Transportation Committee, and Lev Malikoff, Senior Transportation Engineer at the Cape Cod Commission. Ed, you wanted to chime in a little bit more about our terminology, bike ways, bike routes, bike paths?
Yeah, I know it's very confusing. First of all, let me take us back a ways to a simpler era when we had three kinds of bike accommodations on roads. We had class one, which is grade separated, so that that would be a path or even a sidewalk if it was wide enough to accommodate bikes. Class two, which was a lane on, so it's at the same level as the motor vehicle lane, but it's painted separate. That's the only separation. And then the third class, which is a road that's used by cyclists, but not necessarily designed in some way to separate them. And now we have something that might be called class 1A, where we have a separation, actual little berm, that separates a bicycle lane on the street or on a road. These are called mostly bike paths, and in Massachusetts, they're all shared use with pedestrians as well and other kinds of users, non-motorized. Mm-hmm. So that's bike paths. Bike lanes are separated by paint. Mm-hmm. The berm-separated ones are called cycle paths in Europe. Here, they're called bike lanes. And then streets where the roadway is shared don't have a specific name, obviously. They may be called bike routes if they're designated as ways to get places. Mm. And they're often marked with something called sharrows, which is a shared use arrow showing mm-hmm. a bike and some chevrons, and which is supposed to let people know that cyclists are using the road.
Yeah. We have some pretty narrow roadways here on the Cape. So what are some of the challenges of making space for cyclists with our narrow historic roads?
Well, I think Dr. Gross kind of led us to one of the ideas to help make the very narrow roads more suitable if they're going to be used for bicycling as well as motor vehicles, of course, is the use of the Sharrow. So what the Sharrow really tells both bicyclists and motorists is it tells the motorists that bicyclists might be expected on along that roadway, but the positioning of the Sharrow is very important, especially if there's any parking. Parallel parking along that roadway. It's a big concern for cyclists if drivers pull in, park, and then open their doors without looking, as they are actually required to do, is to look before they open their doors, is to place those markings on the pavement far enough away, about 4 feet away from the from that that situation, so that a cyclist won't have that occur. So in that case, the cyclists are really in the vehicle lane for the most part, but it really gives a better visibility for them. And then the motor vehicles, of course, when they encounter cyclists, would be permitted to pass the cyclists when it's safe. So when there is no oncoming traffic, a motor vehicle would be allowed to cross a double yellow, pass a cyclist safely, and then re-enter the lane.
You know, I think a lot of people don't know that. But that you can
right. There's a big education and enforcement component to the Falmouth Bicycle Plan, as well as the Regional Transportation Plan, and those documents I was mentioning earlier. Okay. Is that motorists? There's a lot of rules, laws, I should say, that they should become familiar with, so they can encounter, as well as the cyclists, so that they can behave in a fashion that. Is not, you know, unexpected.
Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? We have people who don't on both sides. We have cyclists who aren't following the cyclist rules and drivers who aren't following the rules they should be driving.
Yeah, but I can't emphasize how important education really is. You can only do so much with engineering of the roads, but education of both drivers and bicyclists. Let's face it, both cyclists are generally drivers of bikes sometimes and drivers of cars at others. Sometimes they put on a different hat when they're doing that. And what I'd like to emphasize is that bicyclists in particular, because they're the more vulnerable users, need to be proactive in their communication, i.e., if they're going to take the lane, which is their full right to take the full lane, they should be signaling that well in advance. They shouldn't be darting out in front of a car. They should see, okay, I'm going to have to pull out because I want to take a left turn here, well in advance of that. And they need to be defensive as well, just like every driver should be defensive. And finally, they need to have all their senses about them. They can't be wearing iPods or, I always wear a mirror so I can just take a quick glance. I don't like to turn around and have to see what's behind me.
And be surprised, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so I think all those things, one of the critical things that is important for education in Falmouth is to get all parties on board. And it's not just the drivers and the bicyclists, but we are engaging the police department. We have regular public meetings activities like a Bike to Work Week and Bike Fest in Falmouth that draws the public and gives us an opportunity to engage in this educational process.
Right. Let's talk to Liz, who's giving us a call from Chappaquiddick. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We don't have a bike path on Chappaquiddick, though I think we need one. The principal argument against it is that bike paths are dangerous for the bikes because bicycles get hit by people coming in from the side roads, and I'd just be curious what your panel has to say about that.
Liz, I'm glad you asked that question because I was thinking on the Vineyard and Nantucket both, they have some great bike paths, but a lot of times you have driveways and roads that cross it. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think the most important thing in that type of designing that kind of facility is to have good sight distance. So when you have plantings and obstructions on the edges of the driveways as they're approaching the bike path that's along the roadway, that can become a real concern because a cyclist will be traveling through. They generally don't stop at driveways. They'll stop at intersections, stop-controlled intersections. But if they're all of a sudden surprised by a vehicle, usually it's a vehicle that's exiting the property as opposed to vehicles on the roadway. Generally can see the cyclists and they'll, adjust their speed accordingly. But the sight distance and, obstructions and vegetation, I think, would be the biggest issue in that case.
Yeah. Liz, thanks for the phone call. Mike says, I live off the service road in Sandwich, which is frequently used by bicycles, especially during the fundraising rides like the Pan Mass Challenge. They're putting in a new gas pipeline, and pipeline, and I heard rumors that they would be putting in a bike path at the same time. The service road is narrow, and the shoulders are in very poor condition, so this would be a huge improvement. Do your guests know of any plans?
Yes, that's something that is underway. Town of Sandwich has been very proactive in working with the gas line. This is going to be a key component in the eventual connection from the current end of the Cape Cod Rail Trail in Dennis, which is progressing into Yarmouth and into Barnstable in the not too distant future. Then there will be this connection to the service road in Sandwich, and eventually through Sandwich Village to the Cape Cod Canal.
Mm. So that does that fix that completes the network in a way that the National Park Service study didn't anticipate. The gas line is mm-hmm. a gift,
yeah.
really, in a funny sort of a way.
Yeah. Dan writes, and this speaks to your comments, Scott, about education. It's my experience riding year-round that many riders, tourists and experienced, show a glaring lack of courtesy on the bike path in Falmouth. Could you talk about plans for bike education, and are bike shops involved in that?
Very good point. The Bikeways Committee, with the help of my wife, actually, who's a videographer at FCTV, produced an etiquette, a video about Shining Sightsee Bikeway etiquette. And it's also on the Falmouth Town website. We're planning on posting QR codes on all the bulletin boards along mm-hmm. the bike path, so that people can download that and review it for themselves. But the principles are quite simple. Everybody should stay to the right, mm-hmm. whether you're walking or biking. You should signal if you're going to be passing somebody, whether on foot or
on your left.
passing on your left. It's very simple communication that needs to go on to really make the wonderful resource we have safe for all and comfortable for all.
Yeah. There's going to be times that these bike routes, as we mentioned, are on roadways that have higher rates of speed for vehicles. Route 151 that links North Falmouth and Mashpee, west to east, is one such place. Even though the roadway is wide there, drivers are often going 55 miles plus. So how do we make these roadways safer? I look at that and I think, boy, I'd be a little bit nervous if I were riding there.
Interesting question. There are design techniques that can be used. One is to narrow the roadway, actually, which tends to make drivers of motor vehicles go a little slower.
We really talk about narrowing the travel lane, not necessarily taking away asphalt.
Right. So taking away lane from the motor vehicles rather than from anybody else, and actually widening the shoulder. 151 has a reasonably wide shoulder. There's a project that Mashpee's done, and that is to extend a bike lane, a side path, a path up to the town line. But Falmouth has not chosen to join in that project.
But it is one of the recommendations in our bike plan to do that, to mm-hmm. create a bike lane
extend
along
path.
151
yeah.
to connect yeah. to the bike path.
Right. North
I think this might be a good segue to talk a little bit about the concept of complete streets.
This is a
concept and a program that the Massachusetts Department of Transportation is promoting communities throughout the Commonwealth. A complete street is a facility that can accommodate all users, so not just the motor vehicles, but also walkers, public transit users, bicyclists, in a safe, logical fashion. So in the case of some roads, it might involve constructing a path along the road, or it may be bike lanes, certainly sidewalks. In almost every case, the pedestrians are the most in need and most vulnerable users. But they can use a lot of these facilities with cyclists safely. But I just wanted to mention that the 15 communities on Cape Cod are all been invited to participate in the program if they develop their plans for complete streets. There's up to, I think, $400,000 per community for implementation.
Oh, so there's funding.
Yes, there's actually money.
Wow,
here.
That's unusual.
Right, so I didn't want to have folks think we're all just writing documents here. We're trying to actually get stuff done.
The complete streets is a movement, and it has encountered considerable political turmoil, but in the last few years it's become accepted. I mean, the thought is this. We all pay for these roads. We all expect to use them. There is no secondary network of roads for pedestrians and bicyclists. And actually, if you look at the numbers, motor vehicles, by way of special taxes on the gas tax, pay for less than 50% of what it costs to maintain and build our highway system. And the rest of it comes out of general funds. So we're all paying for the roads. We should all have equity in their use. Mm-hmm. This has been the strong political piece. And it's taken until recently for anybody to have the political, the stick-to-itiveness, mm-hmm. the clout to make this actually into policy. But mm-hmm. now it is.
So beyond the general economic incentives that the state is offering to adopt a complete street policy town by town, there could be other benefits, which we outline in our bike plan. We could qualify as the first town on Cape Cod to be ranked as a bicycle-friendly community. Mm. There's a third-party organization, the League of American Cyclists, that certifies communities around here. And I think Nantucket is the only one on the Cape and Islands that's now officially qualifies as a bicycle-friendly community, but that would be a huge draw for tourists mm-hmm. if we could put that on our signpost coming into town.
Cape, known for those traffic circles, and many instances circles make intersections safer for vehicle traffic, but what about cyclists? Is it safer for them too?
Well, now we're getting into our rotary versus roundabout discussion,
exactly.
Which I love to talk about because we've seen a lot of benefits of the modern roundabout, as it's called. There's a large difference in how they function compared to what everyone was used to, say, with the Sagamore Rotary, which is a large circle. It allowed for a high rate of speed. Otis Rotary
right.
On Route 28 is a good example of a facility where vehicles are entering it at 55 miles an hour on the main line. our traffic laws state that the vehicles in the rotary or the roundabout have the right of way. And that's very difficult in the Otis Rotary. If you're trying to go around that circle, you have vehicles coming in and it's a very dangerous situation at that conflicting maneuver. So with the roundabouts, they're much smaller. The vehicle speeds are much lower. So they're more harmonious with the speeds that cyclists are traveling at. So the vehicle's circulating speed is designed maybe 20 or 25 miles an hour inside in a roundabout, whereas, as I mentioned, like Otis Rotary, they might be going 50, 55. So I wouldn't want to be a cyclist on a facility like that.
We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point, and we are talking with Scott Lindell, Ed Gross, and Lev Malikoff about bikes and making roads safer for everybody. When you look at automobile bicycle crash data for both the Cape and elsewhere, what are some of the most common ways cyclists are hit?
I think a lot of those type of crashes involve turning movements. I think
intersections.
Yeah, at intersections, yeah. there's a couple of problem areas for that interaction. That sometimes it's referred to as the left hook and then the right cross. A vehicle that's coming up, a motor vehicle that's coming up to make a left turn may not, you know, notice the cyclist in the road, so they would have a crash there in that interaction, as well as say a cyclist is traveling straight through an intersection and a vehicle is coming up to make a right turn. That's what they call the right cross. The motor vehicle will make the right turn without looking, and the cyclist would be then struck on their left side.
This is amenable to education. If we teach cyclists to make right turns without and not hug the right curb, so that the motor vehicle doesn't cross in front of them, but rather is in the same lane with them, that's considerably safer. And so, when you have a bike lane, in many places it'll say there'll be a sign that says motorists yield to cyclists on right turns, and it shows and the lane shows a broken pattern in the paint where the cyclist is supposed to get out of the lane and merge with the motor vehicle lane. Among children, ride-outs are more common. That is, when riding out from a driveway without looking, or riding directly off a sidewalk into a street, and they're particularly deadly.
Yeah. So, what are the key rules of the road that drivers and riders should be aware of?
Well, I think the complete streets approach should be understood by everyone to mean that everybody has equity, that everybody has a right to be in their part of the road. And so the single most important one is don't push other people out of your way. Mm-hmm. Don't attempt to do it. That's aggressive and inappropriate. But signaling, communicating, getting eye contact, these are all important things for cyclists to be able to do in order to navigate the road safely.
And cyclists have an advantage. They can be much more expressive and you know, they're not behind glass and tinted glass in some cases. So I always encourage people, especially at intersections, to, you know, make your intentions well known, use your hands, nod your head. And if a driver around here in Cape Cod, it'll frequently stop in the middle of a travel lane when they probably shouldn't be. But if they're doing that, make sure you acknowledge that and move on with speed.
And the rules have changed a little bit. I mean, when we grew up, no helmets. You rode facing traffic. And so sometimes we have, you know, some people following the rules like the same as the motor vehicles, where you're going in the same direction, you're signaling, and others are riding on the sidewalk or they're riding facing the traffic. And that really makes it confusing for everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a very important point. Riding against traffic is a very dangerous and illegal behavior. So riding with traffic, motor vehicles, as I mentioned earlier, when they're passing a cyclist, they have to do so in a safe manner. So when bicyclists are traveling along a roadway, they can be in the full lane. But as far as that whole cooperative experience of sharing the road, what you typically would see is the cyclist would have the full lane, the vehicle would come up behind them, they would be slowing down until it's a safe time to pass. The cyclist, if it's suitable, and again, if they're not parallel parking, they can pull over a little bit to give a little more room to the vehicles. All these types of things are, you know, would be key in making a safer road.
Yeah. We often have a temporary workforce here in the summertime, and I think many of them only have access to bikes for their summer jobs. So we're trying to engage, and some of the towns on Cape Cod, the police departments have been engaging in early sweeps in the springtime and the early summer to help educate the cyclists that, one, they should be wearing helmets if they can, but certainly they should be have lights on their bicycles and be bicycling in the proper manner, not against traffic.
Yeah, I think there's even a program that provides bike helmets for some of those.
There is. And unfortunately, here in Falmouth, we've been very lucky to get the support of the Cape Cod Healthcare. They've given us money to give away helmets at our bicycling events. One thing I did want to plug is that statewide, there's something called Bike to Work Week. It's from May 14th to the 22nd this year. Here in Falmouth, we'll be setting up a table for commuters on the Shining Sea Bikeway on May 18th. And on the 21st, there's a bike fest at the John Wesley Church here, helped sponsored by the Falmouth Bike Lab. And we expect the Falmouth Police Department to participate as they did last year. And we had a wonderful time. It was a great educational opportunity.
You mentioned, the enforcement, existing laws. So how are we enforcing those existing laws with cyclists and motorists?
We're not doing a very good job, frankly. But what we're doing mostly is communicating with signs. Police departments are pretty well stretched. But they have been willing, at least when I've discussed it with them, to do campaigns, and that is to identify a particular set of behaviors or a particular area where misbehavior is going on at a higher rate, and then try to enforce or at least inform cyclists who are doing things that are inappropriate.
There's also the issue of speed, too, and we'd like to see, and the police have been active in this, too, putting up speed warning signs on roads that are frequently we see speeds that are far in excess of what's safe, and that's what really makes cyclists nervous, too. Yeah.
What about the rules of the road for bike paths where cyclists and pedestrians are sharing a space?
Now, the single most important thing there is to signal when you pass somebody. A lot of cyclists don't do that, or they do it so softly you can't hear them.
Yeah.
And we have pedestrians who contribute to this by wearing earbuds, mm-hmm. And they can't hear what's going on either, and then they're startled when someone suddenly passes them.
Yeah, there's a mutual responsibility to be aware, and bicyclists can help the situation by putting a bell on their bicycle. That's usually more readily heard and understood as somebody coming along. But the shared use purpose of the Shining Sea Bikeway is one that sometimes can contribute to conflict or misunderstanding. And it's just, you know, we're trying to get better about educating those users, but also simply knowing that you stay to the right and leave others to pass to the left is a key thing.
Don't take the whole path.
Yeah, being aware. If you've got a dog on a leash, make sure it's, you know, not wandering around, or a small child. It's not an appropriate place to – two things I want to emphasize. It's not an appropriate place to learn to bicycle ride, because you can wander and weave. Mm-hmm. And it's not an appropriate place to be racing along at 20 miles an hour either. If you're going to be using it like that, make sure it's early in the morning and out of season, because you're going to be frustrated and it's not safe.
Okay. John is giving us a call from Orleans. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Question, is it feasible anywhere, or are there any long-range plans to actually build separate bike paths so that bicycles are not competing with cars on the streets, but they're completely protected because they're in a completely separate path? Thank you.
Yes, that's part of this vision in the Regional Transportation Plan. On the Cape Cod Commission website, you can find out more. Looking to extend the Cape Cod Rail Trail connection, as I mentioned earlier, all the way to the canal. There's also an effort ongoing in the Outer Cape to extend the facility from Wellfleet all the way to McMillan Pier in Provincetown. They're still working on the type of facility, or I should say the routing of that, whether it's beside Route 6 or some other area out there, but it's definitely part of the vision. And then there's also connectors in different areas of the Cape Cod to, you know, complete the network at some point.
Marie is listening and she wants to add, that people in dark clothing are invisible at night to cars. For safety, we should all be wearing light or reflective clothing and a light in front and back, she says.
Those are required by state law.
Good to know. But
again, enforcement is an issue. I wanted to add one other thing to the safety question, mm-hmm. and that is predictability. We have some reasonably good motor vehicle laws in Massachusetts, and they're very much consistent with what's extant in the rest of the country. Cyclists behave in the way that motor vehicle operators expect other vehicle operators to behave. They're a lot safer than if they start doing things that motor vehicles can't do or won't do, that are against the law. Signaling when moving to turn or riding on the right-hand side of the road are things, for example, that cyclists need to be able to do.
Creating new bike paths, improving roadways, and then long-term maintenance of this infrastructure is expensive. So what are some of the resources available for funding? How are we paying for this?
Probably mostly the way we maintain our roads now, which are Chapter 90 monies that come through the state and to the towns. Lev, you might be able to say more about this.
Well, as I tried to mention in the beginning, we're trying to access resources from the state and at federal transportation departments through our regional transportation plan and through our transportation improvement program. Another thing that we're using state and federal money for is to do planning efforts, including a feasibility study of extending the Shining Sea Bikeway along the rail line all the way from Route 151 in North Falmouth to the Cape Cod Canal. So we've had a minor kickoff meeting with the Bourne Transportation Committee last week. It was very well attended. Dr. Gross was there and other folks from Falmouth as well. So this is going to be just a basic feasibility examination of having either a facility alongside the existing rails, or if it's found that the rail service is not going to be continued. Currently, there is no active service on the line, although it could be used on occasions to actually use the rail bed itself. Mm-hmm. One versus the other is going to have a large cost differential. Using the existing bridge structures probably would be the lower cost option. If there had to be a side alignment, then there would have to be some kind of new structures constructed. I think there's 11 bridges and crossings over roadways or over mm-hmm. wetlands. So there's going to be a significant issue one way or the other.
I would imagine you've got opinions on both sides about that, of whether we should save the rail in case rail can come, or should we use it for a bike path. Is that what you're hearing from folks on board?
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's part of the discussion, is to really understand what the plans are with the owner. The state is the owner of the tracks. They do have a contract with the existing Mass Coastal service that had been taking out solid waste from this transfer station and on the military base. Whether there'll be some other use for that, that's something that will probably be in continued discussion.
Tell us more about the Falmouth Bike Lab and why other towns might want to consider starting their own.
Oh, that's the treasure in our town now. Falmouth Bike Lab was started by a very entrepreneurial and great citizen, Jeremy Tagliaferri. Unfortunately, he's moved to Seattle recently, but a group of volunteers have continued to maintain the Falmouth Bike Lab, where they have accepted bicycle donations throughout the community. They meet on a weekly basis, and every Thursday between 7 and 9, and on the first Saturday of the month from 10 to 1. You can go to their website and find out exactly the schedule and what's coming up. But they have trainings for volunteers to learn how to fix up bikes, and they fix these bikes up and turn them back out into the community, generally free or for a small donation, and can provide some of the free helmets that we've been getting from the Cape Cod Healthcare as well. And I can't tell you how many happy kids and mm-hmm. some adults, too, have. I think they gave away over 150 bikes last year.
Wow.
And they have at least that many sitting in storage now. So please come by the Falmouth Bike Lab sometime.
It's what's known as a community bike shop. There's one in the Boston area, in Broadway Bicycle School in Cambridge.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the helmets, because as kids we grew up, we didn't wear helmets, and I haven't in my adult life worn a helmet, but I will going forward, just because, and as a retired pediatrician, tell us the importance, not just for kids, but why should we be wearing helmets?
No, the numbers are stunning. If you are in a bicycle accident, the chances of a head injury are fairly high, unless you're a very capable rider, in which case you're likely to fall on your right hand, mm-hmm. it turns out. In any event, if you have a head injury and you're not wearing a helmet, there's an 85% better or greater risk that you will have a serious brain injury. So helmets work.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, just real quickly, you mentioned the bike path is not a place to teach your kids to ride the bikes. What's a better place? If one wants to teach a bike, where should they go?
I would look for a nice lawn. That's what made you fall.
That's a good idea.
My daughter, I remember her just on being on a slight slope, mm-hmm. that it was easy to bike downhill on the lawn. But then find a school parking lot or somewhere to get your chops.
Obviously off hours when the cars are not there.
If there's any problem, you have the kid scooter the bike around for a while.
Right.
Yeah. Jenny just suggested empty tennis courts. There you go. We're not using the tennis courts. Scott Lindell is chairman of the Falmouth Bikeways Committee. Ed Gross, vice chair of the Falmouth Bikeways Committee, and is the bicycling representative on the Cape Cod Joint Transportation Committee. Lev Malikoff, senior transportation engineer at the Cape Cod Commission. Thank you all for being here. And we'll put some links up on our website, capeandislands.org, to some of the information we talked about this morning.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thank you, Mindy.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point, with production assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.